From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
He reports that, quote, what's known for sure is that three-person panels comprised of aides to House Speaker Welch, Senate President Harmon, and Governor Pritzker have been meeting separately in recent days with every Democratic member of the state's congressional delegation to see what they want out of the decennial reapportionment. Has your side of the aisle looked into that? What do we know about these meetings? Are any of these folks going to be testifying in front of our committee so we can be more transparent in this process? And I guess where are we at on these secret meetings that are taking place?
Senator McClure, thank you for that. I am unaware of any meetings taking place. I have not seen that article from Mr. Hines, so I can't comment on those meetings or on that story. What I can comment on is we are having this process to hear from the public what their perspective is about the proposed and the soon-to-be proposed legislative maps and the direction that they'd like to see us go.
That's the Democrat L.G. Sims. Before that, we heard from Republican Senator Steve McClure from Springfield. They were discussing the proposed congressional district maps, a story in Cranes this week. I talked about how the maps were being shown and discussed with Democratic congresspeople before the public was allowed to see them. The map now has been released and will likely be approved in coming days. We'll discuss that and also preview the upcoming legislative session starting next week. We'll discuss that and more on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Emeritus Professor and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois State House editor. And joining us this week, Mike Miletich. He is with the Capitol Bureau of Gray TV. And Mike, it's always good to have you on with us.
Thanks, Sean. Always glad to be here.
Well, let me start. We'll get into the maps in just a moment. But Hannah, before we even do that, can you talk about that story that was referenced at the start of the show here and whether or not these maps were sort of these backroom deals going on long before Republicans or certainly the public was allowed to see them?
Well, I mean, the answer to that question is, of course, yes. Democrats have been operating this way since the spring. You know, they have control of the legislature. They have control of the governor's office. Of course, they're going to do everything possible to take advantage of that majority and, you know, to draw them even more seats to maintain that power. And so Greg Hines at Crane Chicago Business reported this week that, you know, folks from leaders' offices and representatives of the governor had, been showing the draft maps to, you know, those in Washington. So of course they existed. I mean, you know, it's no question that they existed because right as we were getting ready to tape the show, finally, they were the draft map of how Illinois' 17 remaining districts will be apportioned, finally dropped. And we saw a lot of interesting things there. But yeah, I don't think anyone thought that this wasn't happening behind closed doors. The Democrats say that they have to kind of do what they can to retain that power.
Yeah, Charlie, I go a couple of ways on this because this has been how this process has been done for years in Illinois. So this is nothing that the Democrats have suddenly come up with. This, you know, Republicans have done the same thing at times, and it's not a terribly public process. A lot of deals are going on behind the scenes. At the same time, you can't get credit for being open and transparent if you're also playing that same game.
Yeah. The last couple of times, the Democrats have done a better job of going through the motions and putting up a facade, having hearings and inviting people to submit their own maps. But yeah, it's always done behind closed doors. And it always is a couple factors figure into it. Whoever is doing the redistricting wants to protect incumbents. That's the main thing. And they also want to try and increase their numbers. And when the Republicans got to draw the map in 19, what was it? It would have been 1991, the legislative map. They did the same thing for the legislature. Now, the interesting thing is that for most of the modern era in Illinois, under our new constitution since 1971, congressional redistricting has been an afterthought for the General Assembly. They're more concerned about their own districts, or the Illinois Senate and the Illinois House. And the maps in, I'm pretty sure, 71, 81, and 91 congressional maps were actually promulgated by federal district courts based on proposals that were submitted by various interested parties. And so the legislature wasn't directly involved in creating those maps other than to ratify by law what the federal courts created. And that changed in 2001. And the interesting thing about 2001 is that it had one of the most gerrymandered maps that I've ever seen. Now, the one that got unveiled today kind of rivals it, but it was a map that was passed with little or no complaint, little or no dissent, and it was an agreed process by the people in Congress. Then House Speaker Denny Hastert, a Republican from Illinois, then U.S. Congressman Bill Lipinski, a Democrat from Chicago's southwest side. They sat down and they carved up the state and agreed on a map that was designed to save all the incumbents, save one. We lost a seat in that redistricting, and Hastert and Lipinski and their allies decided that the sacrificial lamb was going to be David Phelps, who represented Southern Illinois. And so his district was basically carved up into five other districts, and he was left with nowhere to run.
Well, we know we're going to lose a seat this time, too. That's right. And that's likely going to come from what we would consider downstate outside the Chicago area, right?
Yeah, and that's where the population loss was. And unfortunately for the Republican Party, that's where their strengths are. And if you look at the map closely that was unveiled today, you notice that some of the weirdest shapes are districts that are drawn to basically link urban areas, one from Champaign over by Decatur, over to Springfield, on down to the Metro East. Another one that starts up in the Quad Cities, actually it runs all the way up to the Wisconsin border. Then it cuts over to take in Peoria and takes in portions of Bloomington. And what's left is a lot of rural areas. And the Republican Party has been doing better in those areas of Illinois, the rural areas, the small towns. But unfortunately, there's also are the same areas that have lost population. So it looks like Democrats are going all in to try and maximize the number of congressional seats that they can get. The map that we've been operated under for the last 10 years was drawn with 13 Democrats, 5 Republicans. This one would be 14 Democrats and 3 Republicans.
Mike, let me bring you in on this because you've had a chance to look the map over. We only got it a few minutes before we sat down to start it taping the show. But your thoughts on it, certainly another district or a couple of congressmen, Republican, looks like they've been drawn together.
It seems that Mary Miller and Darren LaHood would actually be drawn together in this because of a slight change for Mary Miller's address that was on file. It's going to be really interesting because obviously in the Peoria area, even in the Bloomington-Normal region, Darren LaHood is very well known. And clearly many Democrats are not fans of Mary Miller. They've been very vocal about that over the past year and a half, especially after her involvement with some incidents in Washington, D.C., and some statements, alluding to the fact that she was having a statement that aligned with Hitler. Many people were upset with that. But you also have one of the most popular Republicans right now, Adam Kinzinger, in the same district as Marie Newman. Obviously, this is all about making sure the Democrats have stronger control here. And I'm pretty sure all of us knew that this map was going to mean a lot to the future for not only Adam Kinzinger, but also Congressman Rodney Davis. Clearly, it's going to be decision time for what they hope to do moving forward, because even for the new district for Rodney Davis, it's going to be a lot of land. I mean, he's going to be going the 15th district. He lives in Taylorville, and it's going to stretch from Taylorville all the way over to the eastern portion of the state, the Indiana border, and up all the way to Freeport, Illinois, which for those that don't know, that's in the Rockford area. So this is a very interesting map. I'll say that the 15th for Rodney Davis is a very, very interesting shape. And the 17th is just wild from the northern portion of Galena all the way down to Bloomington. For this map.
And Mike, just real quick, on Davis, of course, his name has come up as a possible candidate for governor. A lot of people thought, well, if he is somehow drawn into what might be an unwinnable or not a favorable district for him, he may consider another option. But it looks as though he's somewhat protected then.
It'll be interesting to see his thoughts on it. I mean, it's definitely been up in the air that he may run for governor here, but he constantly told people that he wants to continue and stay in Congress. That the thing that I think is going to be interesting is to see what happens here with Congressman Kinzinger, because he has floated the idea of running for Senate against Tammy Duckworth. So it's going to be an interesting few weeks here.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Mike Miletich, and he is with Gray TV's Capital Bureau. Now, Hannah, let me ask you on this, because we have talked and speculated for months that, you know, what will Democrats come away with in a new map, that there was some thought of a 13-4 breakdown after we go to 17 congressional districts, but they actually have surpassed that?
Yeah, they really went for it, and they decided to try for a 14-3 breakdown, which, would mean a net gain, a much bigger net gain for them, and of course, net loss for Republicans, in an effort for Democrats to be able to keep the U.S. House, which is, it's not just that we are coming up on midterms, next year that are typically difficult for, the president in power and that party, and especially seeing, President Biden's ratings kind of tank this over the last few months, especially. It's a huge question mark whether Democrats would be able to pull it off. But, as I mentioned before, Republicans have had this, decade and a half or more effort to control state houses across the country so that, GOP advantage could be kind of weaponized at every way. I mean, weaponized if you are a Democrat. To be clear, everyone engages in gerrymandering. This is obviously Illinois' new proposed map is a prime example of that. But they're really going for it, trying to do that 14-3. And as Mike mentioned, we will see what decisions will be made by these sitting incumbents. Will Adam Kinzinger go for it and run against Tammy Duckworth? Will Rodney Davis, will he accept his wildly different district and just, keep running for Congress as he has been? Or will he, drop it and say, I do want to challenge Governor Pritzker. I mean, certainly it would be the path of least resistance to just keep running for Congress, but we'll see what he wants to do.
And Anna, real quick, I wanted to ask you as well about the other possible legal challenges that could come to a map like this. Certainly it doesn't do what a lot of Latino leaders would like to see.
Oh, that's right. I mean, hugely, the theme of the 2020 census data is that Latinos have seen population growth everywhere, not just in Illinois, but definitely Illinois, especially huge bastion of Latino population. And Latino leaders wanted to see an expansion from one congressional district to two. That did not happen in this map. And I would imagine that the Latino voting rights organizations, the ones that have also already sued over the legislative maps that Democrats passed earlier this year, you know, if they weren't already like 100% on suing over the congressional maps, you know, I could see that easily, this being the tipping point where they also, you know, file suit over, you know, the same claims that they had at the state level of, you know, Voting Rights Act and, you know, equal representation. But it's really interesting. The map also, it preserves Black majority districts, definitely to a much greater extent than did the legislative maps, but that's kind of the power of incumbency. You know, we have Congress people, longtime serving folks, you know, Danny Davis, Bobby Rush, Robin Kelly, who was obviously also now the chair of the state Democratic Party. You know, it'd be a tough sell to, you know, break up those existing districts. So yeah, we'll see how these Latino groups react to this in court, probably, but definitely not at all what they wanted to see.
Yeah, Charlie.
And I would point out that there will be court challenges. And again, if history is any precedent, this map will be tweaked. It's unveiled today. It may not even be the final version that gets voted on by the legislature in the next couple of weeks. And in the past, districts have been tweaked, particularly to create stronger minority majority districts. And so I could see that happening. I could see this map being tweaked very easily to create two Hispanic districts. And another thing that struck me, having watched this stuff for a long time, if you would have tried to draw this map, say, 20 years ago, when, as I said earlier, it was a done deal between the two parties, you would not have been able to create as many Democratic-leaning districts as now, in part because of the changing suburbs. The suburbs are now a lot more Democratic than they were, say, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And so that makes it easier if you're a Democratic map maker, because you have all this suburban territory that is now fertile ground for Democrats, in part because of the increased Hispanic population in those areas, and also in part because of the way the Republican Party has taken a kind of a hard turn to the right, that a lot of the moderate voters who used to vote Republican back in the days of Jim Thompson's and the Jim Eggers had become either independent, or they say, well, I'll vote for somebody like Pritzker before I vote for somebody who espouses the Donald Trump rhetoric.
Yeah, Mike, you cover a lot of these probably more Republican areas, or certainly areas that are in the downstate region. Your thought on basically what a map like this will mean to those areas when it comes to how people view state politics or even federal politics?
Well, I think already there's a lot of distrust of politicians in the areas that I cover. But I've had multiple people that reach out and say that they're concerned that their voices don't matter. And actually, it doesn't matter the political leaning. There were so many people that participated in the legislative redistricting process just a few months ago that openly said, you know, just a few weeks ago, they didn't even want to try to participate in these discussions for redistricting for the congressional maps, because they saw lawmakers didn't incorporate their ideas or their viewpoints. They feel that it was pretty much okay, we're gonna get this done and push it forward. And that's why some of these hearings, I mean, the one yesterday, there was no one in the room besides one lawmaker, Tim Butler, and a few journalists. That is what redistricting has become. And no one participating virtually or in person to testify, because I think the public pretty much understood that this is just going to happen. You know, there's a few more hearings coming up here. There's two today and then a few coming up next week. But I think that many people want this to move to an independent process. Clearly, that was never going to happen this year once we saw what happened with the legislative maps. But maybe there will be a shot that once this is all over, within this next year or few years, there will actually be a push for everyone to come aboard, because there has been bipartisan support on this previously, to get this passed, to make it an independent process.
Yeah, Charlie, you've heard that before too, people saying after every redistricting, we need to do something, yet here we are, same process.
Yeah, and part of it is this only happens once every 10 years, and people don't have an attention span, most of the public, on an issue like this that would continue day in and day out, week in and week out, month in and month out over a long period of time. People would be upset about it now, but this only happens, as I say, once every 10 years. A year from now, will people still be upset about it? The vast majority of the public, probably not. There are other more pressing immediate issues that folks are worried about than the shape of the map, particularly if you're someone who is of the attitude that they're all crooks anyway.
Hannah, just a couple of minutes here before we move on, but I wanted to talk about the veto session itself. We know we're going to have these congressional maps, and like Charlie said, they might be tweaked a bit before a final vote, but we're going to have something come up in the next couple of weeks for lawmakers to approve. What else is on the agenda?
There are a few things on the agenda. We've talked in previous weeks about what Democrats might do about the Healthcare Right of Conscience Act, which is that decades-old law that has shielded doctors and other medical providers from having to provide abortions based on their religious beliefs. And in the last few months, those who don't want to be vaccinated, they've used that law to justify their desire to not get their shots. And so Democrats have floated adjusting that law. Not sure where that's at, because, that if they open that back up, that might leave them vulnerable to, arguments about, abort. They don't want to make it easier for medical providers to, deny abortions. But also on the abortion front, there is a significant, amount of pressure to repeal Illinois' Parental Notification Act, which is kind of the last remaining abortion restriction on the books in Illinois, that currently requires teens, if they are seeking an abortion, to let their parents know. And if they really, really, really don't want to do that, then they're kind of forced to navigate the court system to do that. And, progressives, they want to, remove the last vestige of abortion restrictions, because in the last several years, that's what they've been moving toward. And, notable that House Speaker Chris Welch, he has been the one who has introduced this in the past. And so we'll see where that goes. There are a couple other legislative fixes, like trying to fix the electric vehicle rebate language in that big energy and climate deal from last month, where technically, as written, the law only allows the $4,000 tax credit for those who live in Chicagoland. That was obviously not what was intended. But, a couple other things there, but definitely most eyes on the congressional maps and possibly PNA.
Okay. And Mike, what are you watching for in the veto session?
There's a possibility that we could see significant reform for nursing homes in the state. Obviously, it's been a big issue for years before the pandemic, the way the nursing homes are run. And this would look specifically at the payment model for nursing homes across the state. Obviously, many people in these facilities are on Medicaid, and Medicaid is a huge payer for these facilities. But they want to specifically look at focusing it more on the patient instead of the industry. People constantly hear that the biggest problem is that it's all about profits, right? These facilities make so much money, yet the care for patients suffer, and the employees that work there don't want to be there because they're working these ridiculous hours and dedicating their time to make so little. So the way that they would structure new funding for these nursing homes, they would make sure that they're not only making the payments better for patients, but also for these workers to have better quality and have stronger wage increases and benefits. There was a hearing this week that this plan from HFS was discussed. And obviously there was some back and forth about what different providers would like to see. Of course, this isn't going to end all the problems in nursing homes. There's a long way to go here, but many feel it's a step in the right direction.
All right, time now for our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's start with you this week.
Well, Hannah talked about in the coming session trying to make the rebate for getting an electric vehicle extend statewide instead of just in the Chicago area. But there's also apparently in the works a huge package to try and bring the investment involved in going green for vehicles to Illinois. Greg Hines and Cranes reported this week that Prisker is going to unveil an incentive package worth hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe the largest one in state history, hoping to lure additional electric vehicle manufacturers, maybe more importantly, to try and get Samsung, which is considering building an enormous battery factory, for them to bring it to Illinois. And the centerpiece of Pritzker's plan, Greg reports, is a refundable state income tax credit of up to 100%. Under this proposal, the company would get to pocket the income tax that's withheld from you. You would still get credit for having made that income tax payment, so it wouldn't affect you one way or the other, but it would give the company additional incentives.
Hannah?
Well, it was the end a couple of weeks ago of the third quarter for political fundraising. And 2 weeks later, you know, reports are filing in or, you know, pouring in. And Illinois Democrats, the Democratic Party of Illinois, raised less than Republicans, the Illinois GOP, you know, for the first time in probably, I don't know, years ever. Historically, Democratic Party has been a prolific fundraiser, of course, with former House Speaker Mike Madigan at the helm. And then when Congresswoman Robin Kelly took over, you know, there was this big question of whether as a sitting elected official, she could actually raise state money. Big legal question there. It took months to get resolved. Now there is a resolution, but still, you know, kind of lost a lot of the momentum. I'm sure it will pick up, but definitely, you know, another thing for Republicans to point to and say, ha ha. And then for those who didn't want Robin Kelly at the helm of the party, they can say, told you so.
And Mike.
One of the other proposals that we'd see during veto session, very interesting. Illinois could try to ban the sale and possession of ghost guns. These are any types of guns that are made with the 3D printers or kits that people could buy online. That these guns, they're undetectable. They don't have to go through background checks. And that's an idea that came from Cook County Sheriff Tom Dart and Senator Jackie Collins.
All right, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Mike Miletich with Gray TV's Capital Bureau. You can get a podcast of our show by going to nprillinois.org, through the NPR One app, or iTunes. And join us next time. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.